Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's Tuesday the 24th of March. I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Kate Mason.
And this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. Remember, you can always get in touch with us at Andy Brassel, at KVL Mason on Twitter, and Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com on the email. Yeah, Jules is a bit under the weather this week. Get well soon, mate. So we're very, very lucky to have Kate step in. And in these extraordinary times that we're living in, Kate, when the Prime Minister announced that there was going to be lockdown last night, you were actually at Sky Sports News at the time, weren't you?
I was, Andy. And it is extraordinary because, of course, you know, Sky is still going on something like a skeleton staff. So normally you'd come into the studio maybe 3 hours before you go on air, and you would say hi to everyone, and there would be a teeming newsroom, and there'd be, you know, you'd bump into people from Sky News, or you'd, I don't know, see someone from the website team. But as it is at the moment, there's just as few people as can possibly be in that little space to make everything still run, and everyone's pretty somber. And then, so I was on a six for about an hour, and then on again just after the Prime Minister's announcement for about an hour and a half. And it is pretty bizarre to, because of course, even though we're trying to still bring you sports news in these straitened times, it's still a case that, of course, you have to reflect what's going on. That's the most important thing in people's minds. So yeah, it was pretty bizarre to come on air at 8:30 and say, this is Sky Sports News and the Prime Minister has just addressed the nation. Here he is. It's kind of wartime stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's extraordinary. And while football's in this kind of holding pattern, we don't know how long this piece of string is, and especially the different stages that different countries are at. We don't really know when not just football in the Premier League or the UK, but in Europe, will be able to resume. And you know, maybe it's not even the most important thing at the moment. Well, definitely it's not the most important thing at the moment. But of course, there are footballers out there who are faced with this unprecedented situation and trying to get themselves in nick for a season that they presume at some point will restart. So obviously there are physical and mental implications to that for them. So with that in mind, we got former Arsenal and England physio Gary Lewin on earlier, and he talked to us just about what the players might be going through at the moment and how they might be preparing for a situation that you can't really prepare for.
I don't think they'll be well prepared, because I think this is something that nobody, let alone footballers, has ever experienced before. They would have all experienced during their careers periods of time when they've been off through injury, through other reasons, for illness. But not to the degree, this is completely unprecedented for anybody, really. So what would have happened is that in the last 2 or 3 weeks, as this has sort of progressed, football club, their backroom staff would have been assessing what they could do with their players, how they could best do it, and then analysing what equipment would be needed, what equipment the players would have, and trying to set programmes, realistic programmes, that players could maintain some level of physical well-being and fitness, but obviously in a very restricted environment.
Gary, we're not unaware of what the top players are up to, because they kind of walk us through their lives habitually through Instagram. But obviously we know what sort of Sergio Ramos and Cristiano Ronaldo and people like that are doing at home, because they have these enormous gyms at home. Tell us what the challenges would be for lower division players, be it in England or elsewhere, who perhaps live in more restricted spaces and don't really have access to those sort of top of the range facilities.
Yeah, well, I think it even goes further afield than that, even in the Premiership clubs, because everyone thinks of Premiership clubs and their multi-million pound first team players. But what you've got to remember is the big clubs also have big academies and very, very in-depth development squads and academy players. And at Arsenal, well, I still have an association with the Arsenal women's team. We have one of the most successful women's teams around. And they don't have access to a lot of these facilities. So even the bigger clubs have got these logistical problems as well as the smaller clubs. Now, the first thing that the clubs and the backroom staff would try and work out is, okay, what sort of things do we need them to be doing to be maintaining any kind of, it's not only physical fitness, but actually strength and power, because a lot of programs when the players are in the clubs is about developing strength, maintaining balance, maintaining mobility with power. So there'll be lots of different ways of doing it. The obvious ones are the CV, so the bikes. They are allowed to go out running still in the parks, which I think is very, very helpful in the professional sport for players to be able to do that. But also like mini circuits at home. I mean, one of the biggest things we've been sending out to a lot of the players is kettlebells and dumbbells and power bands, so they can do some basic circuits indoors to maintain a lot of power. And again, that's where you can come creative. I mean, if they've got stairs, you can do work on stairs. You can do a lot of, we're doing a lot of yoga work and putting out yoga classes to the players. This is where the internet is so powerful, in that a lot of clubs have got internet connections for the teams. And so they can do group sessions. There was one on the telly the other day. I was watching a lady who did parties for kids, and she did this online party for about 20 kids, and it was absolutely fantastic what they did. And so again, it's being creative and trying to work out what facilities we can all tap into whilst being at home. But it goes further than that as well. You've got players that foreign players in a foreign country may not have their families here, maybe on their own. So there's loads of different aspects of it that really need to be looked at, and it's not an easy thing to answer because every person will be completely different and every surrounding will be different. So the clubs have got to be very, very creative in how they try and get their players to exercise.
You touched on it a bit there, Gary. Obviously, what footballers have had, what all of us have had, fans have had this routine of going to football, watching football, you know, twice a week, three times a week, multiple games on the weekend for months and months and months, all our lives perhaps. And everyone's lost this in one fell swoop. What do you understand about the impact that could have on players' mental well-being?
I mean, this is such a vast subject. I mean, I've heard the phrase institutionalized used, and it's not wrong. Players, their whole lives are geared around about performance and getting ready for the next game. And we're now in the business end of the season, so we're in the last 10, 12 games of the league season. You're getting into the final stages of all cup competitions, and suddenly that stops. And again, I mentioned it earlier, this will be unprecedented because players sometimes stop through injury, players sometimes stop through illness, or they stop because they've been dropped from the team. But the matches still go on. I mean, the from a personal thing over the weekend, turning the telly on and there's no match of the day of a game going on, or there's no live reporting of any sport anywhere. It's a massive void. So that's from a sports perspective, that there's suddenly this adrenaline rush they get two or three times a week, this competitive urge they get on a regular basis is now being withdrawn. So again, that would come into some of the thinking of the support staff in that if they were doing group sessions with players to make it competitive. So you get this competitive edge still amongst the squad. That's from a sporting point of view. You've also got, and I sort of touched on it earlier, is the mental and the mental well-being aspect of they're scared. I mean, this is a virus that can affect anybody in their day-to-day lives. You've already seen instances of managers and players around the world that have actually been infected. And although the experts are telling us that young, fit people may only get a mild dose of it, you're still hearing stories of other people that are fit, relatively fit and healthy that we know of that have still been affected in a really bad way. So they're scared. They're scared for their families. They don't want their families to become ill. Their parents, players, footballers, even if in their own countries, get scattered around the country, but there are a lot of foreign players here. I mean, one of the biggest fears they've got is being away from their parents. Could you imagine if you're living in a foreign country and your parents are elderly and you're thinking, well, if I don't go home and something bad happens to them, I'll never forgive myself. If I go home, I'm putting me and my family at risk because I'm travelling. And I'm putting my family at risk of actually catching the virus. So there's a lot of pressure on everybody, but obviously I'm just talking about footballers, from not only about the lack of football, but also what's going on in everyone's life day to day at the moment.
Finally, Gary, do you think this is a possible positive aspect that we could take from this whole terrible situation, that we arrive at a point where we understand players' physical and mental needs a bit better?
I'm always a glass half full, not half empty, and I think there's always positives that will come out of situations like this. I think the awareness of the general public of how important exercise is, I think the awareness, the mental health aspects of this, using players as an illustration about even elite sports people can suffer. I think there's a lot of positives. And from a personal point of view, the number of people that will be taking up exercise in their home environment, it would be lovely to see if they carried that on, because I think for the population in general, I think there will be a lot of positives that come out of it. From a football aspect, I mean, the biggest thing that's hit me, positive that's hit me already, is we've only been shut down 2 weeks, and I'm missing it like mad already. So I think the enthusiasm for the sport will grow and grow and grow. And I think also it brings the elite sportsmen to the level of Joe Public, in that they're in the same boat. We're all in the same boat. We're going through an incredible, I keep using the word unprecedented, an incredible time in our lives that I don't think anyone would have ever experienced before. So, yes, I think there will be a lot of positives that will come out of it.
So, Gary Lewin there. Thanks so much to him for joining us. There's a lot to unpick here, really, isn't there, Kate? And, you know, it's a discussion that I guess we've had more and more in football over the last little while. The mental health side of it, and the fact that money and status doesn't make you immune to any of this. Footballers, I think, more than a lot of other people in society, will probably need guidance right now, because they're used to following very strict set rules and a timetable. So having time on your hands can be quite a scary old business, can't it?
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, he says in that about the idea of being institutionalized, and I think probably Premier League footballers could be the most extreme example. I mean, barring the army or something like that, but the most extreme example of it, because ever since they've been tiny little kids, they've had people telling them exactly what to eat and where to go and how their day is going to play out. And I think from what we understand of most clubs who are setting these training plans for all of their players, it will still be being structured, but there is this new level of determining how you're going to spend your day and not having anywhere to go that I think must be very mentally taxing. And when we talked to Gary, he said he brought it up first. He really wanted to talk about the mental side of things.
Yeah, he did.
Because he feels as though perhaps people don't realise. It's a good way of seeing how similar we all are, I guess. It's a pandemic, it turns out, is a massive leveler on society, right? Everyone has to work out how they deal with this kind of uncertainty.
But I guess the other thing with footballers, Kate, it might seem like quite a minor, simple thing. They're used to working outside every day. Now, not us and not everyone listening to this will be in the same boat. We might spend a lot of time in offices or places like that. But for them, like, being inside might feel a little bit like being trapped.
Oh my goodness, yeah. That hadn't actually occurred to me. I think the old one piece of exercise outside a day that Boris Johnson announced last night. I suppose the question is, how long can that go on for? How long are you allowed to exercise outside for? Perhaps you could set up some incredibly diligent circuits in your garden. I mean, that will be, presumably, you think of footballers as all having these really grand houses, don't you?
Yeah.
But we're talking about all levels of the football pyramid here in terms of the structure of their lives. So yeah, I'm sure Premier League players have, to a man, got massive gardens that they can do incredibly impressive hit circuits in. But further down you go, that absolutely isn't the case. And people in London, many people don't have any outdoor space. So yeah, the other thing is, you know, well-being wise, being out in nature. In Japan, they have this thing, forest bathing, which just basically means going for a walk in the forest.
Right.
But it's found to have just huge psychological health benefits, just the very act of getting into nature. And of course, there's the benefits of vitamin D as well. So these are all just huge, huge elements.
And the timetabling thing, we've talked about it again and again and again. People are kind of reaching in the dark for something, I guess, some sort of sustenance in a way, you know, that we can all hope together that there's going to be an end to this. And if we could put a time on when there was going to be an end to this, maybe some people would find it easier. But I think Gary's point, Kate, that he made about just that there being so many moving parts at the moment, I think that's absolutely right. And I thought it was really interesting to hear him pointing out, you know, after that, there's the point where we think it's safe for footballers to train in groups. And we've seen it in Italy this week and a couple of other countries, that individual teams have, Germany as well, have taken the decision to start training again as a group, which, you know, I'm no medical scientist. I don't know if that's a good thing, if it's detrimental, even though it seems that if we are all staying inside, it suggests it's maybe a little bit premature. But I guess there are two things about this. Firstly, the fact that it feels for a lot of people in football that they need to be doing something as a group. And the other thing that Gary was touching on, once it is safer for footballers to work again, whether that be behind closed doors, which I would presume would be the case, or whatever, there's going to have to be the bit where they do that restart, that sort of pre-season, and there's going to have to be the bit where the games are actually scheduled after that. So it is really this two-stage process.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting to hear him say as well that in terms of coming back to fitness, the question, of course, if you get made to play a lot of games in a row, which presumably will happen, you know, we've heard Gary Neville talking about this festival of football and everyone can just play 9 days in a row if they had to. The danger there is, of course, not overtraining. It's just having that difficulty that you might just injure yourself because your body's not resilient enough.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, Kate. And I think it's something that Gary brought up that a lot of people in English football are a little bit reticent to bring up because it's tradition and what have you. The fact that not only do we keep going at Christmas, but we accelerate the intensity of it at Christmas. There are actually more games. And I know from going around Europe that people look at us like we're insane, that we actually ramp it up around that period, especially in the modern era. I mean, I don't think we can cling to what we call tradition when it flies in the face of what a lot of people like Gary think is just, you know, scientific and well-being nonsense, because he is right. Like the quality of football is very, very variable, I think, at Christmas. And we always talk about it as a great thing, don't we? The fact that, oh, anyone can beat anyone in the Premier League when it's Christmas. And it's, well, yeah, exactly. It's because everyone's not at optimum level after they've played three games in a week. I mean, right, going back to the start of this, before, when you had a couple of Champions League games postponed and when most of the leagues were still going, I don't know what your thoughts were, Kate, about when there was this panic about games being postponed, there was no obvious place to put them. So have we finally got to a point where we can realise that, yeah, the calendar's too busy?
Yeah, because when City's Premier League game was called off, they were due to just play every, I think it was every 4 days or maybe even sometimes 3 days for until the end of the season.
Yeah.
And you started to see what an issue it was. I mean, look, we've known for some time, Andy, that the season is crammed full of stuff. And I think this year with Liverpool trying to win the Club World Cup and not putting out their proper side to play FA Cup and League Cup and all this sorts of stuff, we've seen what's going on here. It's not really practical for teams to play as much football as they do. Probably the flip side of that argument, of course, is that these are elite athletes. They've got good people like Gary looking after them all the time. And he seemed to think it would be okay to play a lot of games as long as they were looked after properly. I mean, I think more his concern was the uncertainty, wasn't it? I was reading this, there's a study. Let me tell you about a study from the University College of London. Because I've been reading a lot about uncertainty at the moment, because I think this is the main concern for football for everyone, is that it's more about the fact that we don't know what's going to happen than that something definitely bad is going to happen. So at the moment, you and I, Andy, we're quite healthy. At least I assume you are. You always seem fine. You know, we're fairly young. I imagine quite physically fit. Again, I don't know. But, you know, we're not the vulnerable here. And of course, we have friends and relatives who are potentially vulnerable. So they're a worry to us. But in terms of our own personal physical capabilities, we probably feel as though we're comparatively safe. But it's more a question of the fact that we don't know what's going to happen and we don't know what the future looks like, according to this study I was looking at, it says that that's a more stressful state to be in than actually knowing that something bad is going to happen, which is an extraordinary thought, really, isn't it? That because basically, yeah, if you know something bad is going to happen, you can plan for it.
I do wonder if this is maybe about a reordering of life as well, and a reordering of what's reasonable and what works for us. I mean, to a point, our default has been, right, let's have as much football as possible. Let's be able to watch it every night of the week. Now, obviously, we're at a position in the world, pretty much everyone in the world, where, you know, sport is important and we miss it, but it's not the most important thing. And this has reminded us of that. But when we come back, do you think there'll be some sort of lasting change for a significant amount of people that there is more to life than this? And maybe we can survive without there being football on 6 or 7 nights a week?
I think the demand for football is going to be greater than ever, isn't it, Andy? I mean, Gary was saying there, wasn't he? You know, it's been, can you believe it's been 2 weeks and we're just on Sky, they did this Monday Night Football retro edition, and it was just some clips from Leeds 4, Liverpool 3, 2001 season. And oh my goodness me, everyone was watching these goals with this, you know, slavish devotion on their faces. It was just so exciting to see some football on the telly. So the difficulty is, right, the demand is there and people will watch it if you put it on, and people love it. So I don't know. I think you, well, tell me what you think.
Well, I would say that my smallest children, who football's not even really their main thing, they've already sat down and watched the best of Gaza, and I mean off the pitch as well as on the pitch, obviously. So they've started to embrace the historic as much as anyone else. But yeah, you do have to wonder if something changes here. I think something has to change here, but at the moment, because we don't know where the end is, we don't know exactly what that change is going to be. I think it has to be something. And I think because of the fact that pretty much globally people feel this season has to finish at some point, we talked about this on Jules and Andy last week, that automatically means next season gets chopped, not completely chopped maybe, but truncated, certainly shortened. And I wonder if that is maybe the starting point, rather than the end of this current season that's still to start again. But next season, 2021, is maybe the point where we order stuff into, you know, more of a manageable schedule. Because at the moment, obviously this is a major event, but there's no room for anything minor to go wrong, is there?
Yeah, I don't know how that is going to work though, Andy, because the new season, let's just take the Premier League to start with, obviously 38 rounds per season. You're not presumably suggesting that we cut down the Premier League in terms of number of teams. Then there's all these, yes, additional tournaments that have their pros and cons. I'm not here to judge the importance comparatively of the FA Cup or the Club World Cup or any of these other things. The Intertoto sadly departed, but everyone has got something. There are so many people in place to organise these tournaments and to make them happen, and there's a lot of investment. I mean, business, but also just people working on these things to try and make them a success. Who is going to stand back and say, oh no, that's fine, we'll just can this various bit of football, we don't need it?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily with me, Andy Brassel, and Kate Mason. Who are you feeling comfy in the chair? Are you feeling good?
I am. I'm sitting up very straight, Andy, because I've got my microphone attached to something that's not very stable, and
birdcage.
I have to sort of lean into it. Birdcage, did you say?
Well, it was the first thing I thought of that might have been like able to support a freestanding mic that wasn't a mic stand.
One day into quarantine and Brassel is stir fry crazy.
you've just got to imagine what other people are doing. That's the problem. So that only limits your imagination at the moment.
It's a sort of a sideboard thing, to be honest, Andy. But yeah, I'm sitting perched on the edge of the sofa so that I've got my correct distance from the microphone, as discussed with Luke yesterday in great detail.
Okay, so lovely. Well,
Hopefully it's going all right.
Don't topple. It's all about keeping up that physical form for all of us at the moment. We touched on last week, me and Jules, about how we have to keep a special eye on the lower division clubs, which is such a rich part of English football tapestry. Now, I know you've been speaking to Maggie Murphy, the general manager at Lewis recently, Kate, about what these clubs actually mean as community hubs outside the football sense, which I found quite interesting because, you know, we have tended to look in the early stages of this discussion, and we're still at the early stages of a, you know, funding and support discussion for football at all levels. But we've tended to look at lower division football clubs as these sort of, you know, prone things that we have to help and have to rescue. But they offer a lot more of value than just the fact that people like to go and watch them on a Saturday, don't they?
Yeah, Maggie Murphy, thanks for that little hookup, Andy, because of course she did Ramble Meets with you.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite Ramble Meets.
Yeah, it was a really good one, and she is great. We were talking about how basically Lewis Football Club, obviously Lewis is quite a small place down in East Sussex, and it is a hub for the community, as you point out. One of the really sad things in this pandemic for Lewis, Maggie says, is it's a little community place that people come together. They've got this lovely little bar, as you'll remember from when you went down there, where there's, you know, Prosecco on tap and craft ale and all these things. And they hire it out.
I never got offered a Prosecco.
Did you not?
No.
Oh, well.
You're special, obviously.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but and of course, these clubs as well tend to make money as all clubs do, but it's more significant perhaps for lower league clubs, from being able to rent their space out. You know, they've got a 3G pitch that they other people use in the community. But also it's just a place where people can come and have a nice old social time in a friendly environment. And of course, with football being suspended, that's gone for now. And she said that they've set up this thing on their website, just as a shout out, really, to ask if anyone needs anything, effectively fetching or gathering. Does anyone need any medication picked up? Because she felt as though people might feel as though your football club, you have more of a sense of its identity, right? So it's less scary to say, yeah, guys, I'm struggling a bit. Would you mind grabbing this and this for me? If it's a football club that you're talking to that feels much more like a friendly human face, rather than perhaps getting in touch with one of these really great and lovely Facebook coronavirus outreach projects. So yeah, she said that some of the staff have been dropping things off for local residents, and it's just on their website if you wanted to take a look. And if you're local, presumably.
And it's something that, you know, football clubs, these football clubs do all year round in the Football League, isn't it? It's not just a case of, right, we've got nothing to do, so we're going to interact with our community and we're going to try and help out the vulnerable. I think, you know, you look at a lot of clubs, and I know this case with AFC Wimbledon and numerous other clubs in the Football League. Are we starting to realise where their true value is?
Yes. I got the Plough Lane Bond thing through my door, actually, Andy. I didn't know
you'd
been
eating. Oh, did you?
Yes.
I could have emailed, saved myself the work. Walk.
Yeah. Give me a call. I think it's going to be very interesting. She said as well, I think we're all trying to take some sort of positives that we can from this terrible situation. As I suppose, natural optimists. I've got to say, actually, last night when I came in from Sky, I felt pretty down about the whole thing, because you start to see the knock-on effect, and when something as extreme as the Prime Minister having to address the nation and put everyone into isolation comes out, it's, you know, we don't have the capacity particularly to deal with that. And the normally things you do to cheer yourself up, they're all gone, right? It's, you know, it's like being injured. But anyway, that's a side point. I'm just trying to say that it's difficult for everyone. And it's really important, I think, to focus on some of these positive ideas. And hopefully the football club as part of the community will be strengthened in the long run. And hopefully Premier League clubs as well, some of which are very good at that, will continue to be more of a part of their community as this goes on, and to help out if they can.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and we really hope that's the case. Look, we've got a ton of correspondence, and you've been brilliant as always. It's at Andy Brassel, at Jules Breach, usually at KVL Mason, and Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. We've got a very full mailbag, and this is one that I felt was particularly germane given what we've just been talking about, Kate. And Nick Hardy has got in touch and said, what do you think of the idea of forcing a pre-season before the season returns, forcing Premier League and Championship clubs to play away at local League One, League Two or conference clubs? It would guarantee full-scale gate receipts for small clubs in each region where they are surely needed. All games would definitely sell out as everyone is missing football. Thanks, Nick. What do you reckon, Kate?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Everyone is certainly missing football. I don't know how exactly that would work, but I think we've got time on our hands, haven't we, to have these kind of debates.
Yes.
And that does seem like a good way, potentially, of supporting local clubs. I don't know. Would that be the main way that football clubs would want to be supported? I don't know. What do you think on this?
I think it's a really interesting suggestion, and the fact is that, as you pointed out, people will, you know, not just want to see the games, but want to come to the games. I think the major impediment with that is the possibility that, or I would say less possibility, more probability, that once the various seasons, and I don't just talk about this in the Premier League, but all across Europe, restart, I suspect that at least initially they will be behind closed doors for a number of reasons, including the fact that the authorities and public services are stretched. I mean, you know, maybe there would be, we've just talked about how packed the calendar was, but if there was to be some case where there was leeway in the calendar, maybe something could be put in there. Or maybe if we do reach a point where 2021 season is taking place, I mean, it might be that the cups are thinned out or paused or in some cases got rid of, as you kind of alluded to before, Kate. But maybe the idea would be this year to make that sort of contribution. If the FA Cup does happen in 2021, whenever that may start, maybe Premier League clubs have to be drawn away and they have to be kept apart from other Premier League clubs in the draw, maybe for the first round or for the first two rounds, in a similar situation to what happens in the DFB Pokal when that starts at the start of the season in Germany or something like that, because I think that would be something that doesn't mess with the current calendar but does offer something to those smaller clubs who need some help.
You're well into that, aren't you? I think it's been debated quite often in the context of trying to make the FA Cup more relevant in the modern era. So I'm on the fence a bit about this, Andy. I know you're keen on it from a German Bundesliga perspective, but it's one of the many things that has been suggested in terms of trying to, inverted commas, improve the FA Cup. If it could be a sellout, I think then that could be very useful. And you know, when we're talking about having games played behind closed doors in the Premier League, they have been discussing having that at a neutral venue, because then, do you remember in the Champions League, one of the last games, the PSG game against Borussia Dortmund?
Yeah.
It was behind closed doors, very good, but there were thousands of Paris Saint-Germain fans outside the stadium congregating. So you've got to be careful, of course, if you put your game on in somewhere local, that all the fans will come and it will come, in some regards, defeat the point of having it there. So perhaps that could be an option. Your neutral ground could be one of these lower league clubs.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, and we've got plenty of time to thrash it all out. We've got another one here from Jamie Davidson. He's got in touch and said, really enjoy the show. Always give a fresh and interesting perspective on the week's football. Thanks, Jamie. My question is about the effect the virus will have on the transfer market over the next few years, both at the top level and lower down the pyramid. We've been seeing a significant rise in transfer fees in the past few decades, epitomised by the ludicrous fees paid for players like Neymar at the top level, as well as fees in excess of £10 million being regularly played in the Championship. Due to the financial strain put on all football clubs, but mainly smaller ones, by the COVID-19 outbreak, will we see a crash in the transfer market as clubs are forced to sell players due to loss of matchday revenue, putting a huge financial strain on certain clubs? There will be a much higher availability of players, as well as a higher necessity of selling said players. It's an interesting one, this, isn't it? Because we've been talking, and I think Jules and I touched on last week, the idea of contracts and where that might be. I think that's one of the smaller problems that exists going forward whenever the various seasons do resume. But the transfer market is a big deal, and it's particularly a big deal for smaller clubs who are looking to sell on to survive.
Yeah, it's a slightly different case with Neymar, for instance, isn't it? Those ones at the top of the pyramid, because, and yeah, I was out in Qatar when that was going on, because I used to work for BeIN Sports out there, and I remember it very vividly, this sense that for some clubs, for some owners, clearly money is no object. So whether or not the rest of the transfer fees become much lower, I think you'll still have these outliers, because it's more of a statement buy rather than any kind of attempt to conduct business in an organized way. It's more about making a statement purchase, I'm buying Neymar and this is who is going to represent my ambition at the club, and they're not restricted by questions of the value of Neymar, really, to some clubs. They would have an infinite value.
He's a status symbol rather than anything else. That's really interesting. I mean, I kind of wonder, conversely, for the elite clubs, might there be more of these type of signings once various leagues restart?
Yeah, and it's really interesting. In football, I'd have to dig out the podcast and we can tweet it or I can let Charlie know. But I was listening to a podcast about trading players, and supposedly in basketball, you probably know this better than me, Andy, basketball, it's much better to get your statement players in. If you get LeBron James, of course, there's fewer players in basketball. But if you get him, he can turn your entire season around.
Yeah.
It's much better to have spend all your money on your one amazing player. Whereas in football, according to this podcast, it was much more about try and improve the lower, the bottom end of your squad. I don't mean the defense. I mean the least good players in the team, because it actually is more of like the benefit is more spread around the squad. So actually, frankly, in terms of how the team plays, football is, to make an obvious point, much more of a team sport. It's actually not that useful necessarily. You're not going to, okay, maybe Messi aside, you're not going to, as we found out with Paris Saint-Germain, secure a Champions League title just because you've got Neymar. They're not doing it for footballing reasons is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it feels like more of a marketing benefit, doesn't it? And I think it's interesting to see that up until this point of the season now, the fact that Paris Saint-Germain have looked more composed and together in the Champions League. I mean, part of that's, as you pointed out earlier, Kate, a very particular context about how they play behind closed doors at the Parc des Princes against Dortmund for the second leg. But they made a lot more sensible signings last year, and that really worked for them, alluding to that sort of balance that you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that whole point. In terms of crashing the transfer market, I suppose in any recession, it's going to be a case that people become more conservative in their purchases.
Or maybe the wages are affected because, you know, the clubs are simply not in a position to start throwing big money around or the sort of money that they were going to put around before. Because, of course, they're still on the hook for all the contracts they've signed already, aren't they?
Yeah. And this is a problem, you know, globally. People have set up their lives and their businesses with a certain understanding of what's going to happen. And then this pandemic just wipes that all away. There's just nothing the same. Nothing you could have predicted would be like this, I don't think.
That's us for this week on Jules and Andy. Thanks so much for joining us, Kate. It's been a real pleasure. And we'll see you on Football Ramble Daily again soon.
Thank you, Andy. I have had a lovely time. I look forward to being able to make eye contact again soon.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen one of these days. And obviously, all the best to Jules Breach. And we hope you get well soon. And we will
feel better, Jules.
We will see you all next week here on Jules and Andy.
Take care, guys.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.